history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there, eye-opening stories, sobering stories, inspiring stories just waiting to be told if we'll only ask a few questions and take the time to listen. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along that journey, we learn a lot. We're educated, we're entertained, and often we truly are inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. You know, I realize that those of you who listen on a regular basis always see the relevance in the stories we hear. Sometimes there might be some nostalgia about the way things once were. Other times, you tell me that hearing one veteran share his story helps you understand what it might have been like for your dad, your grandpa, your uncle, who never talked about his service in World War II. But I don't know if there's ever been a time in the 15 years that I've spent interviewing veterans that these stories from the past have been more relevant to what's happening today. The coronavirus pandemic has interrupted life in our country and in the world to a degree that we in America haven't experienced since World War II. So maybe there are some things we can glean from the past to bring to bear in the present. With that said, I invite you to access any of the more than 600 episodes archived for you at hometownheroesradio.com. And for today's episode, it's an opportunity to mark another 75th anniversary. It's an anniversary that will be observed at the National World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C. this week, just minus the crowd that usually accompanies such an event. On Tuesday, March 24th, you can stream online the commemoration live on the Facebook Live feed of the Friends of the National World War II Memorial. I have a link for you at hometownheroesradio.com. They'll be marking the 75th anniversary of an effort that remains the largest airborne operation ever carried out on a single day in one location. That would be Operation Varsity, and it's often overshadowed by previous airborne engagements in Europe and World War II. We've heard a lot on this show over the years from the paratroopers who jumped behind enemy lines on D-Day. We've heard about Operation Dragoon and the invasion of southern France, about Operation Market Garden in the Netherlands, and of course we've heard from airborne troops who survived the Battle of the Bulge. But it's not too often we hear about Operation Varsity, which had nearly 17,000 paratroopers and glider infantry troops descending on the area around Wesel, Germany, and the Rhine River. The strategy for Operation Varsity tried to incorporate lessons learned from some of those previous drops. 540 airplanes carried 12 parachute battalions, six of them American, five British, and one Canadian, and right behind them came 1,300 gliders, all loaded up with troops. Nearly 3,000 of those 17,000 soldiers would end up killed, wounded, or captured. 56 aircraft were lost, and 16 more would be shot down while resupplying those troops. The result of all of it was an acceleration of Germany's defeat, with Operation Varsity forces capturing more than 3,500 German prisoners, and more importantly, securing bridges on the Rhine and towns in the vicinity that could have given German forces the leverage to slow that Allied advance. Today we're going to hear the memories of three men who were a part of Operation Varsity, two glider pilots, and one paratrooper. In the paratrooper's case, this would be his first taste of combat. For the glider pilots, they'd been through a few things prior. They had survived one-way glider flights in those previous airborne assaults in Europe. For glider pilot Morris Bennett, Operation Varsity meant dropping in just 50 miles further down the river from where he'd almost been killed 6 months prior in the Market Garden operation. Let's pick up his memories there so we can add a little perspective to how accustomed he was to these life-and-death situations by the time Operation Varsity launched in March 1945.
Arnhem, Nijmegen, we grossed back, and we had the 82nd Airborne, is what we took in, and we didn't have enough pilots, so we didn't even have a co-pilot. And part of the equipment I had, there was a trailer with all the signal equipment, all the electronics for the communications for the whole group. So I had the trailer with that and the two people that worked with it. Some of them were shot down on the way in, but we knew it was going to be a rough mission. It was about 3 hours on tow, and we left somewhere around 7 in the morning. It was in September. We had Mae West, but I put an extra flak suit under my seat and went over my legs and one over my deal. And right after we hit the coast of the Rhodes, we were shot at by ground fire, barges on the bottom, and then we were shot at also by fighters. But the Spitfires came in and the P-51s came in, our defense boys, and they took those out and they took out the other deal. But I could see the tracers coming down. You see them going through the side of the tow ship and come out on down the tow line. And then by that time, they were going through ours. And that was probably the scariest mission that I had as far as wondering if I was even going to get on the ground. But after we got over the barges and got a little further inland, we were able to land. But I was picking up ground fire after I hit the CP. And we landed about 10:30 in the morning. The paratroopers were dropping at the same time we dropped. Normally, paratroopers come in ahead of us and clear the ground before we get in. But we were on the ground at the same time that they were. First lieutenant ran over to me and he says, I kind of cracked up a little bit. I mean, I had to get on the ground because I was being shot at pretty heavy.
And that glider, with what it's made out of, doesn't take fire very well.
And so I landed a little bit faster than I normally would land, and it was sandy. And I nosed over, so I just knocked the nose end of it off a little bit, but the load and everything else was on the ground in good shape. I landed right by an ammunition dump. There were all kinds of ammunition and guns and everything. There were stacks of them that the Germans had got together. And I says, I think I'm okay. In other words, of course, I was kind of dusty and dirty. Of course, you got probably 30 pounds of equipment, your helmet and all the other gear and the ammunition, and your legs are full of groceries for 3 or 4 days or whatever the case would be. You have everything on you that you don't have no chance of picking nothing up. You're all ready to go. So when you landed, you got out of there. We went over to this castle, and the German officers had just left it having breakfast. Everything was still ham and eggs and everything just on the table when we landed. And so we stayed there that afternoon, and then that night they marched us downtown, and we took the bridge that crossed the Rhine, the 82nd Airborne. Mortar fire was hitting us pretty heavy, so they come over and said, in other words, well, you glider pilots, you are guards, you're going to be MPs. So I was an MP for 3 weeks with about 10 glider pilots, and we had over 3,000 prisoners. And we took an apple orchard that had a high deer fence around it. They couldn't come in and reinforce us or bring in any more troopers, and they tried to by air, but the weather was bad. And they made some paradrops. So after paradropped it, they dropped in the German lines, and the Germans got them. And this was at Nijmegen, or the Arnhem, which is a bridge too far. There's a movie on the bridge too far. Well, this is where it was. And so about 3 weeks, we were relieved. They finally got through to us. The British came in and with the tanks and relieved us, and we went back. And I don't even remember how we ate. We didn't eat very much. In other words, I know that, because all we had was K-rations with Cracker Jack boxes. But anyway, we got back on this Army 6x6. And then while I was sitting there, like we was sitting on benches on that thing, and one of the guys that was with us, in other words, he didn't unload his gun or did something, and it went off in the truck bed. But in other words, none of us was hurt. So
it's just in a growing list of close calls. That was part of Operation Market Garden. And before long, the Battle of the Bulge would come along.
The next one was resupply on Bastogne. But what happened on that, I was ready to go. I was to take. It was on December 25th, and I was supposed to take off. The weather turned bad, and I really loaded, and all I had was ammunition to resupply. And went out the next morning, I didn't have to fly it because they brought in somebody else, because they said I already had flown enough missions.
So you were going to fly a glider into Bastogne in the middle of the Battle of the Bulge.
Right. And I was set to go on that, but in other words, then I didn't fly it. So somebody else flew my glider, but it was wrecked, and the guy that flew it was killed. It was on the pilots that took it in the next day. I think the old boy up above is watching over me, and he had something more for me to do. That's the only thing that I've had, because I had too many of them that it just wasn't done till it could have been 5 minutes or 10 minutes or an hour later. So then the next mission we had was crossing the Rhine at Wesel, which was only 50 miles on the river from where we dropped in September, or the original on the Grossbeck drop. But I had, I think, just troopers, and I flew a CG-4, and we flew a two gliders on the same tow ship. We came in across the Rhine River Valley, and broke out of the smoke about 200 feet, and all I had was an apple orchard ahead of us. just landed down between the apple orchard and took the wings off, the outside wings, came in pretty high and slipped and straightened out just before it got where I was supposed to land. And of course, it took some real good flying there to do it. Flying by your seat of pants again, landed, and we were right up against an 88. By this time, that the German army couldn't hit the airplanes at a low altitude. They had to be up pretty high before they could hit them. They didn't know how to set their guns to shoot at 500 feet. But they got where they were, there the tail end, and we landed within maybe 50 feet of a German 88 gun emplacement. And my crew, my ground people, was able to take them over right then.
So the troopers you were carrying took out that 88. Otherwise, you would have been blown to smithereens.
Well, that's right. In other words, that was it. And then the next morning, we stayed that night, whole night in foxholes, and we took parachutes that had been dropped and wrapped them around for to keep warm. And next morning, we went back, and that was the end of my fighting.
So that's one glider pilot's take on Operation Varsity. Wasn't it amazing how matter-of-fact he was? I'm sure it had something to do with what he had done on D-Day and in Market Garden. That was Morris Bennett, and we're going to take a short break, but when we come back, another glider pilot's memories of Operation Varsity and why he had to land his glider one-handed. Operation Varsity was unfolding 75 years ago this week, and you'll hear more firsthand accounts when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.